TechCast Episode 3, Exploring AI in the Creative Industries, hosted by Brian Kinane, co-founding partner at Shore Valley Ventures, along with co-host Tom Winifrith. They are joined by special guests Barry Downs, co-founder of Shore Valley Ventures, and Jack Morrow, Chief Technical Officer of Retinize.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to TechCast, where today we'll be exploring AI in the creative industries. As you know, my name is Brian Kinane, and I'm here co-hosting with Tom Winifrith. And today we've got two excellent guests, Barry Downs of Shore Valley Ventures, which is also working closely with Peerless Investments, investing in AI, and also Jack Morrow, who is CTO of Retinize and is an expert in the application of AI in the animation world. So hi, guys. Welcome again. And maybe I'd love if you could introduce yourselves.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Tom. It's great to be here. I'm Barry Downs. I'm co-founder along with Brian of Shore Valley Ventures and managing partner. And my background is tech. I'm a tech founder and turned VC. Jack.
Hi, I'm Jack Morrow, CTO and co-founder of Retinize. And we are about to launch our exciting new product, Animotive, which is all about transforming the way we create 3D animated content.
Jack, your company is a privately owned company, but Barry and Shore Ventures have invested in it. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Right. The application of AI in the creative industries.
When we're thinking about the creative industries, we're thinking quite broadly here. So we're thinking about film, we're thinking about video, we're thinking about music, we're thinking about animation. And we're thinking about new content formats as well, such as virtual reality and augmented reality technology. So creative industries are very broad. Oh, and of course, I forgot gaming and esports. And actually, they're very, very large sectors by themselves. I mean, if you look at the gaming industry alone, it's larger than the music industry and the film industry put together, that the movie industry put together. So these are vast and huge industries that have already started a transformation as a result of artificial intelligence. And we'll talk through that as we go through it. But one key sector of the creative industries is animation. And Jack, maybe you might like to talk a little bit about that because you're an expert in animation.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, yeah, the generative AI is definitely set to transform the animation industry. I wouldn't say it has transformed it today yet, but we're seeing the very early signs on social media of everybody's proof of concepts going viral, and it's definitely a really exciting time. And, you know, if we look specifically at 3D like 3D animation and character animation, if you start to break down all the building blocks. So, you know, can you do natural language to characters' body animation? Can you do natural language description to, you know, audio to facial animation? And then, you know, can you start to generate 3D objects based off natural language prompts? We're seeing early signs of all of these components being created. And, you know, we are definitely racing towards everything happening in harmony at once, which is really exciting.
So at the moment, this is not something which has a commercial ratchet because you're at the building block stage. Are you saying that it will or it already does?
So I wouldn't say it already does yet, but I'm saying it is, you know, chipping away at different jobs. And, you know, so the stuff that's working very well at the moment is sort of generated textures and materials. And, you know, we're moving rapidly forward into other areas such as animation, such as rigging. So it's not taken over the whole thing yet, but we're increasingly seeing people using these tools in different parts of their pipeline, putting it together in interesting ways. And it is all happening very fast.
And Tom, maybe if I could just add to that. So looking at some of the companies that Shore Valley has invested in, and we've invested across those creative tech areas, we've invested quite broadly in leading companies in each of those sectors. And a very good example is a company called Artomatics. And that was a company we invested in back in 2018. And what it was actually doing was using generative AI to cut the cost of producing computer games. And it was doing that by helping out the artists. Now, as you can imagine, artists go to artist school and college for 3 to 4 years to learn how to be an artist. And then they go into video game development. And a lot of the work in video game development up until the point of Artomatics was not necessarily creative. There was for sure some creative, but some of it was kind of drudge work. It was kind of moving one pixel here and one pixel there. And what Artomatics very successfully did was take the creative and then eliminate the drudge. And artists loved it, but also it speeded up the production process of video games, which is very, very important, because if you look at the cost of producing a video game, let's say a AAA, one of these high quality ones like Call of Duty, that's more than $150 million per game. And most of that's in people time. So if you can improve productivity, you're shipping the game faster and you're reducing the cost. Anyway, Artomatics was a great investment for us because it was so successful. It was snapped up by Unity Technologies, which is a Silicon Valley giant, to be part of their tech. And we, 14 months after we invested in it, and we got a 5x return in 14 months, which was like about a 3,000% IRR on that deal. And that was back 2018, 2019. So you can see that even back then, these technologies were starting to have an impact. Now, if you fast forward into the animation field with Jack, typically it costs, you know, for TV quality animation. Now, we're not talking about a Pixar movie here, but we're talking about something you'd see on your TV, maybe animation for your kids or maybe some satirical animation. Typically, that costs $500,000 to produce per half hour or $1 million an hour. And what Jack and his team are doing is they're cutting the cost of producing that by up to 80%. And they're using a combination of new media, which is VR, and now are getting some of the AI tech into it as well. So really interesting space where we're at the early stages of it, but it's moving very, very quickly. And there's great investments. From a Valley point of view, we see now's the time to invest in these companies to, because they're going to have really big impacts on society.
But you say it's now's the time to invest. You're doing so, I presume, on the assumption that a good portion of the ones you invest in will go bust.
Well, you know, the VC...
No shortage of sort of young men with silly beards and black jumpers around the world starting up companies. So not all of them can be winners.
Certainly not all of them are winners. But the job of VC, and particularly in the AI space, which is a difficult space to invest in because it's moving so fast, there's so much going on, there's changes to underpinning models. The job of a really good VC in that space is to be very good at picking winners and also managing risk, both technology risk and commercial risk in these businesses. And actually, we've had very few failures. In fact, we've only had one failure to date, whereas we've had multiple winners. And that's really the VC model. You want to select the next big thing and get into that early at a cheap price and then get a great return for your investors. And the ones that don't work out, you don't want to invest too much cash in them and you want to kill them quickly. So clearly that's not the case with Retinize. That's going to be the next big thing. And we're very excited about the opportunity. But yeah, VC model is high risk, high return. But you've got the thing about Shore Valley is we know what we're doing. And that's why we're working with great companies like Jack, and also why Perez is working with us as well.
Jack, was it you? I can't remember whether it was you or Barry who mentioned this, but you said that when, in terms of the application of AI, it's taking out the drudge work for your creative men with stupid beards and black jumpers, but not the creative bit of it. Is that right? Was it you who said that?
Yes. I mean, so certainly today, that is where we're seeing it first come in. And it's, you know, there is, if you've ever looked at the 3D animation pipeline, there is a lot of drudge work. And it's, you know, drudge work combined with, you know, problems with communication. So lots of different studios having to work with each other. And so the faster you can get to a creative concept that everyone's in agreement in, the easier the whole process is, and AI is certainly helping facilitate that.
Would I be right then, assuming that whilst it may be, I don't know, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, where you've cut out a whole load of drudge work, in 5 or 6 years, you would be expecting the AI to be doing largely a lot more of the creative work?
I think it
I shouldn't
certainly
get my
can.
kids into being a designer for cartoons, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're all sitting here watching ChatGPT write scripts and getting blown away, watching it create video content and being blown away. In the world of tech in this space, I think the winners are going to be the people creating tools that allow people to iterate quickly because, you're seeing a lot of this with Midjourney, where they present you with four images and the human chooses which one to double down on to refine. And so, this process, I don't see it moving completely away from humans giving their opinions on what's going on.
But it will, in terms of the numbers of people employed within the industry, it should be driving those numbers down pretty dramatically on a
Oh,
three, four, five, six, 10 year view.
Tom, can I disagree with you on that? I think
Okay.
this could be very similar to software engineering. I think everybody's predicting that because GPT and Bard and other large language models can write code, there's an assumption that loads of software developers are going to be made unemployed. I completely disagree with that view. My view is that software development, there aren't enough software developers in the world, and actually, what this will do is allow software to become all the more pervasive. So we won't have people losing their jobs. We'll have them becoming more productive, and we'll have more software in the world as opposed to less software developers. I think it's going to be the same in the creative spaces as well. I mean, if you look at animation, it's so like there's a pent-up demand for animation that can't be realized because it's too hard to do and too expensive to do. And Jack, you see that with your work with universities, don't you? They want to be able to do this but can't.
Yeah, people need to, with a lot of learning new tools, the speed in which it takes for you to see something that feels like yours is often a big bottleneck. And we've really, if you look at the history of film, there used to be very few people in the world who could make video content. Then with the mobile phone, that suddenly exploded to having 2 billion video cameras in the world. Did people, did the amount of video content produce decrease, or the amount of the value of the video content decrease? It's still growing and growing, and people are sharing more and more bespoke content to each other that targets their
More and
niches
more
more
pictures of sort
precisely.
of cats playing with each other. I mean, it's taking humanity forward, is it?
I would say so.
Actually, I haven't thought about that because I'm a big YouTube
Absolutely.
fan. And Tom, what I've noticed is, well, actually, this use of these tools to empower people to create content, what's actually done is that it's broken the stranglehold of the monopoly of traditional content companies and broadcasters. And so now I follow individual people's brands for content, and you'd be surprised by the amount of incredibly high co quality content that's available online. So I follow a guy called Peter Zeihan who reports on geopolitical affairs, and his shows is as good as any broadcast show, but it's entirely produced by him because the democratization of technology enables an individual to basically produce something that would have been considered only a studio could do before. Tom, you yourself are a prolific producer of high quality content as well. But going back onto the
Modesty is my middle name, so I can't really
indeed,
comment on that.
you are very modest as well, Tom. And
Indeed.
so indeed.
Hey,
So
Brian, could you imagine Tom being empowered with Retinize's product? So he could put out satirical lampoons of certain AIM CEOs, and
my God.
he could do that in like 5 minutes.
I don't need to. They satirize themselves. But
But
okay, we're
Tom,
being distracted here. But
yeah.
So I take that point, but is there a it's all very well saying that we could have many more people creating cartoons, if you like. But what's the commercial application of that? Apart from, well, obviously Jack making a lot of money by providing the technology, who else makes money out of it? Because you say that the sort of the buyers of the cartoon content would have a lower costs, but if everybody's producing it, wouldn't the revenues be going down? Or what am I missing here?
It's not just about the directly paying for the content itself. So if you look at the business models of all the content creators on YouTube, for example, there's a whole range of revenue streams that they're unlocking for themselves, and it's merchandise, it's subscriptions to other platforms, it's releasing their own computer games, and they get the ad revenue from the platform, and they get the revenue from advertisements within the videos themselves. So there's a real range of ways that content creators can earn money through having their own engaging bespoke content.
And Jack, I do have empathy for Tom's comment, though, because Tom, if you look at what NVIDIA are a leading processing company, or you look at what Google's doing, and you look at the latest of AI text to video, you can enter a little plot line textually, and the AI will produce that in video format for you, right? Which is really interesting and incredibly powerful. And so the implication of that, I think, is that the traditional skills, for example, of creating the actual video itself or creating the image itself, that will become more commoditized because AI will do that. And so the pressure on us as human beings will be that those traditional, let's say, intermediate level skill complexity tasks will be automated, and it will require us to reach a higher level of empathetic skill in creating things that people actually connect to. And that could create a situation where a small number of people have that talent where most people don't have that talent. And there is the risk that AI could create a situation where a small number of highly creative people are advantaged over intermediate level creativity. And that has yet to play out. And so that is a valid concern.
I think it's a valid concern. And I think, particularly the places where I see sort of big disruption right now are places like stock imagery, where, it's a lot cheaper to pay for the generated images from an AI, and some of them have been trained more ethically than others, like Adobe Firefly. It is definitely disrupting things. I'm not debating that, but I think, as we've seen with, again, the democratization of video technology, is these skills change, the next generation learn a new tool set, and humans still use the tools they can to communicate with each other in the best way possible.
Can I, without wishing to sound like sort of a petty EU bureaucrat, the dangers were flagged up by Barry at the beginning of this. The idea that you can have your create the most excellent cartoons and presumably deep fakes simulators. Is not one threat to your business model that actually there is legislation coming down on you which imposes either onerous costs or prevents you doing some of the things you wish to do? And should there be more legislation? I mean, I'm rather worried. I don't want anyone to be able to recreate my image. I make enough of a fool of myself as it is. I don't want anyone having the ability to sort of do that for me.
So for us, we're primarily a platform to empower people to perform as animated characters together and create content together. So we will move with any legislation that appears, and we will try to give our users what they want within that context. It is a very hard space to regulate globally. It needs to be a sort of global effort, otherwise each region's going to feel like they're being left behind, and it's going to be a real challenge, and we're all watching it with eagle eyes to see what the outcomes of the courts are.
Tom,
I mean,
if
that
I could.
presumably is a problem, that it doesn't really matter what the EU says or Britain or America. It's hard to see Russia clamping down hard on regulation. And if you can produce illicit content in Russia, it can be exported globally.
Yeah, Tom, I mean, I agree with you, by the way. I mean, I think we do need regulation here. And certainly that deep fake scenario is very concerning. And let me give you an even more concerning version of it, which is you can now deep fake somebody's voice. So, for example, if I wanted to, let's say if I wanted to scam somebody, I could ring them, get 3 seconds of their voice, and then be able to create any script I wanted and replicate their voice. And that could be used, let's say, in an organizational context or a family context to defraud the person, i.e., you know, the classic scenario of, you know, an email going to the CFO, say, from the CEO saying, please transfer the funds. Well, there's examples of that already with deep fakes on audio. And the issue is you can now get those deep fakes from 3 seconds of audio. So that's deeply concerning. And the deep fakes in terms of affecting election results, deeply concerning. The challenge, I think, with regulation, and I'm in favor of regulation of this space because there is a larger AI alignment issue that we need to be cognizant of. The challenge is that it's moving so fast, it's hard for regulators to keep up. And we all know there's been a series of harms in the world caused by social networks, and they've not been properly regulated. So if we can't even solve the issues with social networks, how are we going to handle the myriad of issues that will come from AI? Now, that sounds quite negative. Overall, I'm super bullish on AI to have a positive impact on the world. But we do know from social media that we do need to act now to try and prevent some of the or mitigate some of the negatives that can come from new technologies. And so I do think it is important. And, you know, I look at the alignment problem in three ways. There's immediate kind of social media type harms, you know, the deep fake type things, the effect on the world. Those are all extensions of social media type harms. There's also the existential threat, which you know, is the AI going to eventually create super intelligent AI, and is that going to try and destroy humanity? That for me personally is a long way off, but is not a, you know, if you talk to experts in the space, they will say that is a non-zero probability of occurring. So as long as that's a non-zero probability, we should take it seriously and try to, you know, manage that. And then we've got issues like bias as well, which is a third leg, where we want a fairer society. So AI comes with enormous power and enormous potential to do good, but we do need to be aware that there are pitfalls here, and we need to be actively monitoring and engaging with governments around the world to try and to get the best out of it and reduce the worst.
Let's get away from animation to something else. Mentioned music. How is AI commercially applicable in music? Could it replace my brother-in-law is a professional singer. Should he be thinking about an alternative career stacking shells?
Music's an interesting one, you know, because the industry has gone through so much change already, where we used to have a huge bottleneck on which record labels would choose which music got heard, and the internet has completely upturned that. And so, looking at it, you know, there's already been a sense from within the majority of the music industry that the main way to make money is live performance. So it's been less for most musicians working in the space. It has been, you know, a lot less about their digital downloads, and it's much more about community building and having a direct relationship with the people listening to your content. So again, things like Patreon are being used for musicians to fund their own lifestyles. And that's, you
But
know,
could AI replace my brother? If
Yeah.
listens to my brother-in-law singing,
So
will AI eventually just be able to replicate his style of singing, and therefore,
so I would say the answer to that. I would say the answer to that is yes, but humans will still choose to listen to humans.
So, Jack, there's been some interesting developments in alignment with what you're saying. So, Tom, so in the last couple of weeks, there's been a fake song by Drake. Drake's a global rap superstar. There's been a song by him trending really hot on Spotify and elsewhere. And it turned out it was created by an AI, right? And Drake has complained about it, I believe. But then another artist called Grimes, so she made available her voice to her fans and said, anybody can train an AI on my voice and can publish songs, and I'll share the revenue 50-50 with you, even though she hasn't created the song or performed it. So already, as the way Jack was saying, human beings are reacting to new capabilities in different ways. So some artists are saying it's copyright, although it's not even clear it's copyright because they haven't copied anything creatively from the artist. They've simulated their voice. And secondly, other artists are saying, hey, if I can empower 1,000 songwriters to become my production arm, and I'm getting 50% of their creative output, and my voice is the brand, then I'm good with it. So already you're seeing AI in real terms right now as we speak, affecting the music industry in really a very noticeable and material way.
It's affecting the industry quite a lot, but actually, you know, Spotify has sort of proven that the demand for new content within the music space is not incredibly high, and the majority of their users are listening to the same songs over and over again. So, you know, we could listen to 1,000 new songs by the Beatles. People may choose to, but I think people are going to mostly stick to the original songs by the Beatles.
Hey, Jack, wouldn't that be cool? You feed the Beatles catalog into an AI and you spit out 1,000 new songs. Somebody's going to do that, and it'll be really interesting to hear them. Hey, can I give a change tack a little bit on music? Because one of the other areas, Tom, is, you know, music for movies, music for games. And again, which is a very large part of the music industry. And there have been a couple of companies that have come out and they auto-generate music for that industry, but they've been trained on other people's music and they're currently being sued. But there is to give a little plug, there is an accelerator in London in the letter market that we work with called TMC. And one of their spin-out companies, which is called Darcy, they produce music for the film industry and the games industry, but they do it without training their system on other people's music. They're using kind of a rules-based system. They're actually doing very well at the moment. So what we're actually seeing is lots of companies in this space, and Brian's point is a fantastic example of that. This is happening right now, and the pace of change is accelerating as well. So lots and lots of different interesting use cases and companies forming around this. And you look across any of those areas of creative media, it's happening right now in all of them as well. We could take examples in movies, for example, in terms of deepfake technology being used in movies to de-age people. Or you could look in terms of how 3D media, in fact, one of the companies we invested in, Volagrams, they're a creative AI company which allow you to take your phone and take a picture and video, and it automatically turns it into 3D, which is useful for virtual reality, augmented reality, and, you know, for mixing it up in other creative tools such as Stable Diffusion. So really rapid pace of change here, which is a really fascinating new use cases emerging week by week.
Right. Brian, I think that's about it for today, is it not?
I think so. I think we had a quick run through music, film, animation. It was a good discussion. So I'd like to thank Barry and Jack and, of course, you, Tom. And I look forward to the next delve we do into AI. Thanks, everybody.